Welcome to On Balance. I'm your host, Dr. Rod Berger. I'll be your guide as we explore the stories of today with the personalities impacting tomorrow. Welcome to On Balance. You know, it's so interesting. When I prepare for an interview, whether I'm on a boat somewhere or I'm on an airplane or I'm in the octagon with Habib or doing something that I've not done before and is brand new, there's a level of anxiety. There's a level of sort of not knowing what direction I'm going to go and sort of and hoping to trust myself. And then sometimes topics dictate the way in which I'm going to approach a conversation. And so this is a conversation that I'll probably be having more conversations in my own head as we're having this discussion and interview as we go along, only because I think that many of you probably share some of the same emotions and potential anxieties or profile of anxiety with regards to money and what it means to our lives and the way in which we have developed or stunted a relationship over time. And so I want to get to know somebody who I think is being very thoughtful about how we, and this is me speaking here, and we'll get his perspective, but how do we, what are our origins with money, and how do we understand markets, and can we potentially think of it like a software adoption curve? Can we sort of bring that down so that the sooner that we can become comfortable with currency, with our economy, even as a young person, that potentially will impact the way in which we engage when we are older, when we're adults, and we are hopefully being responsible citizens, and most importantly, responsible and careful with ourselves. Victor Wang, he is the CEO and founder of Stockpile. Now, I know a lot of parents probably know about Stockpile. I will admit that when I learned about Stockpile, I immediately thought about my children. Many of you know are younger. I mean, they're 11 and 9 now. So, thinking about How do they even conceive of money? How do they think about it? How do they want to interact? And how do they think that that I interact with it as their father? Victor, so nice to spend some time with you. And you may tell me that I am way off of the ranch, but I will say that I applaud what you're doing with Stockpile because it feels as if money in general and people's relationship, and this is not sort of writ large, but it is a kind of a convoluted, history, I think, for people. And it depends upon where they have sort of been dropped in, a family circumstance, an environment, how they understand resources and or resources that are readily available or not, and how that might impact the way in which they think about money or fear it or celebrate it or want it and desire it in very unhealthy ways. That's an incredibly long preamble to say, before we get into Stockpile and exactly what you're doing to help young people and I think families broker a conversation, is I'd love to know the origins. Take me back to when you maybe first understood, whether it was that you touched currency or something happened or you were able to do something as a youth that took money in a transaction that you can kind of go back to in your own mind that said, ah, this is real. It's as if a young person who wants to touch a stove, like a baby, right? And they realize, ah, hot. There's a reality to that. Take me back to your first or initial experiences with money.
You know, it's interesting. I think my initial experiences, I think we're very typical. It's very tangible. I give, my parents gave me a dollar or 50 cents, or in that case, back in those days, like a dime, right? And
you're dating both of us here, Victor.
Exactly. Well, when they gave us this, small, stone tablets for. But I think the big thing is that I think we're all mostly start from the same point, which is our discussions about money simply are non-existent. Parents don't like to talk about money. In fact, almost nobody wants to talk about money at all, right? It's not polite to talk about money. We shouldn't talk about money with the kids. That's kind of the standard, right? And so the only way you learn really about money is cash. I go to buy something, I spend it, and then I have something left maybe, right? And so that's literally the extent of most people's experience. What's interesting is that, we did some research last year, I guess it was a year and a half ago now, and we asked kids, who do you want to learn about money from? And what was surprising to us is the number one answer was their own parents. it was above their friends, above school, above social media. And what's interesting is I don't know of anything else that people would rather go to their parents than anybody else. And what was ironic is that when we turned and asked the parents about talking about money, they said, we don't want to talk about it. It was so incredibly uncomfortable. This stat showed over and over again, they'd rather talk about death, politics, like everything else. The talks about the birds and the bees is more comfortable than talking about money. And that's kind of where it was. And, you know, my family, my parents came over from Korea, and, you know, there wasn't a lot of money to talk about. So maybe that was part of it too. But I think that's part of the challenge, right? I think as parents, we kind of have that same thing, which is, who am I to tell my kids about money? I barely know what I'm doing. And, you know, you bring up such a critical point, which is that voice in your head. We play that voice and then we instill that voice to our kids, right? And so part of it is, how do we get those voices to say the right things in the right way to us, you know, even for ourselves as parents? And I think that's really such the challenge, right? How do we get people just to talk about it? And the more we can talk about it, the more you're comfortable with it, the more you can build confidence and resilience and understanding. That's such a big part of any learning process. I think anything we try and teach our kids, we definitely can't teach them by just not talking about it, right? So I think, and it's funny because a lot of those early experiences, that's kind of what I look at is, what was my experience and how could I make my experience, for my kids better, right? And I think as parents, we often try and do that, right? What can I do that my parents didn't do for me? That's a big thing. And I think as parents, we always try to overcome that.
Did you find that there was sort of an arc in your confidence level over time with money, and or did you see where you were able to break through the fog of mystery around money? Because what's so fascinating now is that, you know, you were dating both of us back to the tablet days, the stone tablet. But, you know, I remember back then, look, we didn't have cell phones. We didn't have smartphones. And so you didn't really, maybe you had an inkling because you were watching TV or movies or these different, or you were, you know, seeing magazines at the grocery store about potentially what people were wearing or what they cost. Or I remember sort of when, you know, the Jordans came out, and or, you know, I'm back in the era where kids were putting buttons all over their denim jackets, you know, representative of the music star that they, you know, loved, and these sorts of things. And everything sort of represented an amount of money that went towards that purchase. Mm-hmm. Now we're so oversaturated and stimulated with everything that's sort of glitzy. And I'm wondering if either the mystery of money is sort of evaporating because it's right there. I mean, think about Amazon. You and I right now could be going on and understanding the cost of something in ways we didn't know before. There was mm-hmm. literally a mystery to it. And I'm just wondering if that's either clearing things up or if it's actually sort of clogging the pipe of understanding for all of us and where we fit in that. And then where our value comes from. Is it in what we are representing with what we wear, where we travel, what we drive, where we go to school, or is it in something else? I'm just wondering where you think we are in that sort of spectrum of mystery.
Wow. Yeah, that's a great question. Okay. So there's multiple dimensions in there. I think, you know, I think the first thing is the air of mystery about money. I think what's concerning is that the consumerism that we have is actually trying to make that mystery invisible. I think we have too many ways to accumulate debt. We have buy now, pay later strategies. We have a zillion ways to make it seem like you can afford anything when really that's not true. It's the illusion of being able to afford things. And that's, you know, obviously concerning. And I think there's more and more platforms and tools and payment methods that aren't about paying, you know, being more efficient with how you spend money or being more responsible. It's, oh, don't worry, you can afford it. You can pay it down the road. And I think that obfuscation of the value of money is at some level intentional, right? And I think that's where the practical learning and I think the parental instilling of financial values is so important, because outside your house, everybody's trying to get you to buy everything, right? And not just with like your own interest, like I want to buy this, I see this, I want it. What we have even more difficult for kids is that I'm going to make you want it, not because you want it, because it's going to make you look cool to your friends on social media, right? So there's so much pressure to do things that are bigger and bigger, but the amount of money is the same, right? And so that's, I think that's a big concern. I think it's a big pressure on kids today. And I think that's something that we have to really be cognizant of. And that's why we think that there has to be, you know, really an active participation and discussion between parents and kids.
When you were thinking about, we'll sort of ease into stockpile a little bit here, but I'm just curious. I don't know if I have an opinion about this, but I do think about it. There'll be these moments in my own life where, you know, something, you're doing something over the weekend and something happens and there has to be money or a transaction. And all of a sudden someone says, oh, just Venmo me, or just to, you know, there are all these, it is so easy now to distribute money, regardless of whether or not you have it, but to get it into the hands. I mean, it's almost like personalized learning or something that is so discreet that can be, you know, just between you and me and these sorts of things across the globe. And I just wonder, is it sort of this, it's like a bullet train going so fast. Do we understand, and or because we've made it so easy, do we lose a sense of that sort of that pregnant pause when it comes to a purchasing decision that was an automatic part of our lives growing up, because you had to either write a check, go, you know, and execute a withdrawal at a bank. There were many things you had to do, and then the ATM came. And I'm just wondering where you think that sort of puts us in this gambling world where we are just, I mean, the flow of money, sometimes it doesn't come back, but it sure goes out.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, and it's interesting. There's an industry term. It's like frictionless payment.
Yes.
Now, when you think about it, that's really what it is. I want it so frictionless that you don't even think about it. And, you know, the financial industry is built around that, getting us to transact, because in that transaction, someone's making money. Someone's getting paid to somebody for doing something, right? In the transfer of money, it feels frictionless to us. But on the back end, there's a lot of things happening. And in those wheels, there's, you know, monetary exchange between these businesses and industries. And I do think that it's one of the concerns that we have for, just as parents, which is, well, if I give them a card instead of money, do they feel the same pain? And that's a constant thing that we hear about in a lot of our research, right?
Yeah.
What are the things that we can get someone to think, even for a split second, should I do that? Should I spend that? That's a really important part, because without that, there's no consideration, right? There's no thought about.
Gen Z would, I think, laugh at us that, you know, there was an exercise at the end of the month where you physically had to write out checks to pay your bills. And in doing so, there would be this sort of, I think, natural occurrence over time for the person who's writing the checks that would say, oh my goodness, I'm almost out of a book of checks. How many checks am I writing? And then you would start to go down a pretty, you know, slippery slope of what am I actually paying for? And by doing that, I think hopefully provided some level of audit in real time to say, do I really need to be doing this? You know, I want to save for X, or I want to do these other things. And maybe I shouldn't be allocating this money so frivolously. But now, to your point, you don't even have, I mean, they've made it so we could just take the card and tap something and it works. And how do we then engage young people to say, how do you think about that? I mean, used to, we would also say, you know, Victor, if you want to buy that toy, I remember a Transformer I wanted so bad. It's like, did I save up my money and go to the store with all my coins in a bag? But, you know, I treated it with respect because I had worked hard, and then I do engage in that activity. That purchasing activity. And I feel at some point, yes, we've made it frictionless, we've made it easier, but potentially, and I'm using this term intentionally, have we cheapened that?
We have. I think I think it's like where in-person visits for family members are replaced by a phone call and a text, right? I think that is the inherent thing that's happened. But I think this next generation, they're going to have to interpret that differently, right? Their sensitivity to those things along the way are important. So as much as, you know, we might think that we want cash and coins and things like that to have a physical manifestation to create moments of thought, You know, kids are going to have to interpret that differently. It's a gauge on a financial spending tool. It's a balance within your app. It's a notification that says, hey, you know, maybe you can't afford that. I think that's really the important part. So either, you know, kids learning that skill, or conversely, the development of tools that make it more obvious that those things are important. And I think both of those things are the things that will need to be developed to create success for kids in the next generation. I think, I mean, to specifically be aware that this generational wealth transfer of kids right now is going to be the biggest in history. We want to make sure that doesn't disappear, right? And so how do we, you know, make sure that that money is spent, invested wisely.
I would love to hear your perspective on this and how it applies to the way in which you think about stockpile and building out. It's like an opportunity mechanism is how I think of stockpile. Is when I interviewed Deepak Chopra, he said, well, there are many things that he said that just kept my mind spinning as a seminal thought leader, I think, on our species. But he made a comment that, you know, the younger generation is starting to get annoyed with the physical world because they live in worlds that they can manipulate. If they want to move a tree within a digital landscape, it's as good as gone. And yep. Are we prepared to understand a world, I'm talking about this incredible transfer of wealth, right? Are we prepared to understand the implications of a generation coming up and those coming after them, where the physical world that you and I know is second to the digital world that they live in?
Yep. Yeah. And I think that's an ongoing challenge, right? I think when we look at that, and it's interesting because a lot of things that we do in regards to investing and finance are actually very applicable to things that are outside of finance, because it's the same, you know, drivers, same emotional journeys, same struggles. It's all those same things. And I think in this transition from physical to virtual, I think there's a learning that's on both sides, right? Because the virtual world has its pluses, minuses, and we as parents need to understand it so that we can help guide the kids, like, does that make sense? Think before you do that, right? Because they don't have the necessary experience of here's the downsides of that, right? And the same thing happens the other way, right? Which is like, you know, they don't have, let's say, the financial experience in how to spend, how to save, all these basic tools. But I think the thing that's important is that there has to be that communication between kids and parents. And I think the big question for us at Stockpile is, how do you do that? How do you make that happen? And, you know, I often talk to my team and tell them, like, the most important part of our platform is to get kids and parents talking together, right? How do we get that to happen? And so, you know, the thing we want to do is, you know, both for parents and kids, is to build relevant experience. You know, one of the things we talk about is this, there's this big buzzword, you know, financial literacy, right? Like, and I think that's, you know, a little bit of an illusion, because I think there's so many programs around financial literacy, and it's very much take a quiz, read this article, read this blog, whatever that is. But study after study shows the same thing. It's like there's negligible or no impact on future behavior.
Is that because they're not tying it to the emotion, to the humanity of what money is and what it might or potentially represents to us?
Exactly. Exactly. It's the same reason why Monopoly will never teach you about real estate, right? Because it's not real money.
That's true. But it might teach you about competition, but it's not going to teach you about money.
Exactly. It's like the only way to have the real experience around financial choices is for it to be real money, right? And have real consequences around that. And that's kind of one of the things we often, you know, use as a example for ourselves all the time is, you can't get good at basketball by reading about basketball. You have to play. And this is really built around that. And I think it applies to anything, right? It's like you have to go through real struggle with real plus and minuses, right? You can't have, you know, 100% victories. You can't have, like, winning every game is not going to teach you anything about anything, right? So I think what's so important, and I think what we always try to do is look at how do we create a real experience so that down the road, you know, that experience becomes relevant so that they have confidence, they have resilience, and they're not overreacting to things that are happening around them.
Talk to me a little bit about the, I will call it the demographics maybe of the user base of Stockpile. What's the average sort of user, or the for that family, that teacher, that parent, or even young person that's listening to us that says, I want to check that out. What will the, what's the initial experience like? What can they expect?
Yeah, I think the main thing we look at is trying to keep things as simple as possible so it's a good learning platform. What's interesting is that the vast majority of parents have never invested either, right? So a lot of times it's a learning experience for the parents and for the kids and the parents. And so generally we see kids anywhere from 10, 11 on up investing together. And, you know, we've made it pretty easy. Like if your uncle wants to help you invest, that we have a gift card where you can give a gift of that you can redeem for stock. But we also have other people that start investing for their kids when they're born. We have a nice blip of 0 to 1 year olds that open an account. Not, I mean, not them, but their parents, sure. Of course. But the whole idea is like, how do we simplify the starting process, right? How do we make it approachable? How do we make it where that customers who come on board feel like they can be successful? Because when, I mean, when we did research back in 2018 and 19, the number one answer we had with people who wanted to invest and didn't is that I don't feel like I can be successful. I don't know enough to start. And we have to overcome that hurdle. And that's really what we focus on. How do we make it simple? How do we make it easy? How do we make it approachable? And especially for kids, how do we create this interaction between parents and kids so it's a communal learning process? So we have one thing, in, you know, in particular, it's this concept called kids choose, parents approve. And so what happens is parents don't make the investing choices for the kids. Kids make the choices. They say, hey, I want to buy Amazon. It'll send an email to the parent and they say yes or no, right? So it's like kids get to make the legitimate decision and parents get to be the guiding voice of, hey, that's a good idea. That's a bad idea. Or, hey, let's talk about it.
It's such a subtle choice, by the way, that you guys did that. But I think it's, I bet that's probably one of the most powerful choices that you made. Because yeah, you could imagine that if Stockpile decided, oh, this is what we're going to do and kind of get kids sort of in the game or on the playing field, but you made it where actually the parent was, you know, on the front end and the kid didn't get to actually pick that.
Exactly.
Boy, they would just fall off within the first probably 30 days.
Exactly. Because at that point it's like, oh, let me practice your piano for you. Well, that's not going to get the kid very interested in piano, right?
Talk about, so how, over the arc of the life of the company, sort of where are you in any statistics that you think are compelling, not from a, you know, a showy perspective. I don't mean that. I just, so that people understand sort of the depth of interest that you have really discovered, I think, from a lot of people that have potentially been reticent. And I understand that as a parent, just in where and when to sort of dip your toe in. Have you seen growth over time in ways that you expected, and or were you, have you been surprised by sort of that adoption that has been taking place?
You know, it's funny, our focus on kids and families was initially kind of unintentional. I think when the company started, it was this idea of we'll introduce fractional shares, we'll introduce these gift cards, and it's for everybody. And so the challenge, I think, you know, as a business, you know, when you say you're for everybody, you're kind of for nobody, right? So it's a little bit, you know, it was kind of just, you know, in the wind. But what was really helpful to understand is that we saw so many of our customers were kids and families. And it was a huge portion, even though we never focused on that audience. And so they came on just very organically, especially with the gift card. I think that is, you know, where uncles, aunts, grandparents, everybody can be contributory to a kid starting to invest. That's huge. And the data around the number of kids that start with the gift card, it's big. I mean, it's because mostly it's about anybody in your circle can easily help you get started investing, and they don't have to get your social security number. They don't have to get all your personal information. They just hand a card. And I think that type of simplicity, that way of how do I make that starting step as easy as possible, that had the biggest effect on kids and families. And so I think it was about 2 years ago, we said, you know what? these are customers that love our product, that has a great fit. We have a great feature that allows them to be successful, you know, from a learning perspective. And that's where we went 100% focused on that. And that's allowed us to look at ways to build out features specifically towards that audience.
If you were creating a bit of a dinner party or a round table consisting of the players or the segments of the financial sector, where's Stockpile sitting and sort of who's to the left and to the right of you?
Wow, that's a great question. You know, I think what's most importantly is we're sitting with the kids, you know, I think when we're looking, you know, one of the things that's probably helpful to know for myself, I did not come from the financial industry. I did not come from banking. I didn't come from any of those things. And for myself, that's one of the things that I saw just from my personal experience is that, well, even though, you know, my parents were successful and we were able to become financially comfortable, we didn't know anything. And it wasn't until like my late 30s, early 40s that I really started to take it seriously. And once I learned this is how it works, it was very, I think I found it very concerning. Why doesn't everybody know this? Why, how come everybody doesn't have this opportunity? And then that's part of my motivation of like, how do we change that? Right. And so at this dinner table, I'm absolutely not, you know, sitting with the Fed. I'm not sitting with the bankers. I'm sitting with the parents and kids. And we're talking about like, how can we make this exciting? How can we create a learning environment they enjoy? How do we have them have real experience? You know, hopefully we talk about money the way we talk about our kids' soccer games, right? That's what we want to do. That's where we want to be.
So I should be picturing you at sort of the kids table, like Thanksgiving when it's the adults around and then there's a kid table and they're having fun. Like, what are they talking about? Oh, Uncle Victor's talking to them about
money. It, you know, it is that. And it's, you know, it's funny because, you know, both my kids play soccer and, you know, in on the sidelines, I mean, I don't talk about, you know, stockpiling that environment, but so many kids, I mean, parents come up to me and they say, hey, I heard your kids are investing in stocks. And I said, yeah. And they said, well, how do I do that? And these are, you know, these are people that are very, you know, senior level executive,
yeah,
people who have, you know, wealth and accomplished. I'm like, I don't know how to start. I'm like, I'll help you out right here. But I, once again, I still don't tell them I work at Stockpile. I said, let me help you.
Tell me about, I'm very interested in the foundation. So talk a little bit about the impetus for the foundation and what your hopes are long-term.
Yeah, I think the foundation is its own, has its own goals. I think, you know, Stockpile has the general things from a business perspective. We want things to learn, but the foundation gives us the freedom to be very liberal in where we put our money, how we create education opportunities, how we incentivize in a very different way that would be, you know, potentially restricted as a business or, you know, within our brokerage, like you can't do certain things. The foundation, it has the latitude to do things that are completely altruistic, completely 100% based on how to incentivize kids and groups to start investing, or even just building financial, you know, financial understanding. So the foundation is the one that works with nonprofit groups. You know, we do a lot of work with Young Investor Society, groups like that, to try to, you know, make sure that those groups, that we can help them and provide financial resource and incentive so they can do more.
Let's pivot as we sort of head to the end of our discussion here, Victor. And I'm really curious, as we think about sort of Gen Z and we think about young kids coming up, there are incredible data out there around purpose over profits, understanding sustainability, so much more within the context of what it means to be human and in relation with others and our own planet. Social impact investing is obviously gaining a lot of steam. How is that world and that sort of that piece of the market, how is it going to impact Stockpile in the way in which you think about the user base as they start to age and matriculate through Stockpile and mature, that they're going to be looking for those types of I guess, opportunities? Is there a place for Stockpile to play and or educate?
Yeah, I think for us, you know, because we're self-directed, we don't really try to, you know, incentivize or drive people towards certain types of choices. But what's important for us is to make sure those choices are visible and known. We, you know, have groups that where it's around environmental issues or things like that, so they can invest in those things that are relevant to their own personal values. But also what's important is that in that process, we understand how they're making those choices. What's interesting is that we do see a lot of kids talking about value-driven investing. But what we tend to see is it's more, well, this versus this. This one's slightly more environmental. So we see less of like, oh, I'm going to be all in on that. So it
there's
tends
a gradient
to be more
there.
Of a, exactly. But you know what I do like, and it's something that I've seen with my own kids. It's like, they think about how it works, right? So one of my kids was, you know, it was during the pandemic, and you know, they were choosing what to invest, and one of them said, "Oh, I want to invest in Tesla," and I said, "Why?" And he said, "Well, I think it's really good for the environment," and I said, "Okay," and he said, "I also heard that because people weren't driving, the there's less pollution around. So I think people are going to make buy more Teslas and more electric cars." And I said, "Yeah." Like, so then they're going to make a lot of money, so I make a lot of money, right? So there's that's
talk
kind
about
of
the life cycle, right?
exactly. But you know, I think one thing, you know, obviously is you know, both of us as parents, I mean, really that experience together is so important, right? And you know, I'll point to one specific example that I think is so critical, and I think it really hit home to me that, oh, it really does work the way we hoped it worked, because it was earlier this year, and my son wanted to sell all his Tesla stock. And we generally had the rule, I don't say no, I just say why. And I remember he came to me and said, "Oh, I want to sell all my Tesla stock." And I said, "Okay, you know, give me your reasons why." And first thing he said was, "Well, all my friends are selling their Tesla stock." And I go, "Eh, I don't care about that. What else you got?" And he said, "Well, Tesla's really low." And I said, "Okay, so what do you think that means?" And he said, "Well, you know, I don't want to lose money." I'm like, "Okay, but if you sell now, you guarantee you lost money." And he said, "Okay." And I said, "Well, so what do you think is going to happen next week, next month, next year?" And he said, "Well, in the long run, I think it's going to do better. I think, you know, in the end, the demand for electric cars is going to keep going up. There's more," he didn't use the word infrastructure, but he meant to say that it's going to be more charging station. Right. Now keep in mind that, you know, he's only 15 at this time, and we're walking it through. And I said, "Okay, so given this is what you think long-term, what do you want to do?" And he said, "You know what? I think I won't sell." And I said, okay. And what was great was all his friends sold and he didn't. And what's awesome is that, well, first of all, bragging rights on the playground for sure, right? But what's more important is that he now understands how to not overreact to market changes. He understands financial resilience. He knows long-term financial thinking. And what's great is that there's no article, test, book that would ever teach him that lesson in any other way. He will know that for the rest of his life. That is really what we're packaging up with Stockpile, is to make sure that happens over and over again.
Let's close with this, Victor. Outside of being a successful entrepreneur, I would really be curious as to the moment in time that you just, and I'm asking, I guess, a personal question, so I appreciate consideration, but as I'd be so curious as to sort of the dark corners of your mind when you think about being proud. And I think it's important that we are proud of the things that we individually do, and I think the risks that we take, especially when we think about sort of the foundations of what creates a civil society, an organized, structured society, and having a well-oiled economy and participants in that is vital. Do you ever allow yourself to think about the role that you're playing, though you may be at the kids' table, right? In what we were sort of painting there, Because I think what we're talking about, and now with the foundation, is so much. I mean, yes, it's about money and the sort of the passage of money from one entity to the other. And at what point do you sort of call and see if it ends up in your bank account? I understand the mechanics of that. But to me, this is much more. This is about creating an identity, really a sense of agency. And I wonder, at what point on that wheel sort of the value that you think you're providing, do you stop the game, the roulette, and say, you know what, that's the slice that I'm the most proud of, that most people would probably be surprised at?
Yeah, it's interesting. As an entrepreneur, as a business person, you know, for myself, I can't speak for everybody, but just the drive of money is not going to keep me up until 2 o'clock in the morning working on stuff, trying to build the best platform we can. I think the thing that's really important to me is when I think about my dad, who came here from Korea, $40 in his pocket, got married, had 3 kids. Now, looking back, I'm thinking that's fiscally very irresponsible, but, you know, we'll move past that. But, you know, what happens is he built a generation of wealth for our entire family, right? And my biggest concern is that that opportunity doesn't exist today. I think if you come here from another country with $40, you're going to have an excruciatingly difficult time even to keep your head above water. And I think that is what I think is so important, is that, I mean, our family has enjoyed, you know, this generational wealth. And what troubles me is the difference between me and somebody else. Why do I get to enjoy that and someone else doesn't, right? They work just as hard. They're just as committed. They're just as smart. That opportunity for everyone should be the same. And that is so central to what drives myself and our team, is how do we make sure everyone has the same chances, right? How do we make sure people feel like you can succeed too, even though you may not think it, right? The people who have wealth should not have all the secrets to maintain and create more wealth. That should be available to everybody, not only in terms of the tools and information, but the way of thinking, right? And that's what we want to make sure that we're providing.
Well, I find you to be incredibly transparent and human. And I think that whether it's right, wrong, or indifferent, I think that money in general in Hollywood, and the way in which we've thought about it or romanticized it or vilified it, has been less than sort of transparent and felt much more synthetic. I really, really enjoy just your authenticity. I think it's, as a parent, I appreciate that, regardless of a platform and executing on how an app and technology will work. I think it's about the people behind that technology. And I sense more of a dad in you than I do a CEO and an entrepreneur. And I think that's probably for the betterment of those that do understand and enjoy stockpiles. So I really want to thank you for spending some time for me personally and selfishly to get to know you and really the essence and the mission and the spirit of Stockpile. Couldn't recommend more. Check it out. Learn for yourself. You can go to stockpile.com, and you can also watch Victor in a TEDx. He's very affable and out there, and you can learn more about it. And I think that's what we need. We need more transparency, not only in the financial sector, but in the way in which we communicate with our kids. Once again, I'm your host, Dr. Rod Berger.
This concludes another chapter of On Balance. Connect with me via LinkedIn, Twitter, and Instagram. I'm Dr. Rod Berger.